Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you live, as we do every Monday at this time. Holy Blue Sunoco! Do you know we're on our way to the 7th year being with you every Monday evening? Thank you very much for listening and being part of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. It's always great talking about the Eastern family, both old and new. Remember, you can always listen to the radio show on your computer by going to www.ealradioshow.com or on our sponsor's website, www.repaonline.com. Of course, this is the Retired Eastern Pilots Association website. The other way is to just call into the radio show's live online phone number, 213-816-1611. This will put you right into the queue with our other callers. You may even want to join in the conversation or ask the host or guest a question. We encourage you to add to our show by joining us live and on the air. Now, let's get flight number 279 in the air. How about it, Chuck, in the tower?
Eastern flight 279, are you ready for takeoff?
Miami Tower, Eastern 279, we certainly are ready for takeoff on 27 left.
Roger, Eastern 279, winds are from the west at 5 knots. You're clear to take off on 27 left.
Roger, Miami Tower, Eastern 279, we're on the roll.
Like I was right there on the runway. Beautiful noise of those jet engines on that 737-800. Welcome, folks, to our radio show tonight. And our show tonight is about anything you want to talk about, really, or as we refer to this type of programming, open mic. We'd like to start off, though, with what recently came out of the opening day ceremonies at the Rio Olympics. I'm sure most everyone is listening to it or watching the Olympics on TV right about now, and probably we've lost half of our audience, but they can always come and pick it up in the archive versions on our website. We thought it might be interesting to tell you about the two schools of thought as to who was first in flight, that is. First, as it pertains to aviation. And that's what we talk about generally on this show. And aviation is mainly related to Eastern Airlines. And we got more to talk about that, about the new Eastern Airlines group at the end of our little discussion about who was first Let's take an Eastern commercial break first, and then let's get this flight in the air. So here we go with our Eastern commercial.
Attention, please. Eastern Airlines Flight 72, your Fiesta flight to Mexico and the ancient pyramids, now departing at gate 19. Attention, please. Eastern Airlines Flight 19, your holiday cruise to the emerald beauty of a Puerto Rican rainforest, now ready for departure. Attention, please. Eastern Airlines Flight 25, your vacation flight to cool Caribbean lagoons, now ready for boarding.
Dorothy, since you suggested this article coming out of Rio, where, of course, the Olympics are being held as we speak, you suggested with this article that since they had at the Olympics a discussion as who was first. First, that is, in flight. Why don't you start the article? And after all, we are an aviation-oriented group, and we certainly would like to know the two sides as to who was first. Dorothy?
Certainly, Neil. The article was written by Pierre Verdi. The 2016 Rio Olympic opening ceremony paid tribute to a man named Alberto Santos Dumont. But who is Alberto Santos Dumont? Turns out Santos Dumont was an aviator, a famous aviator. And in fact, Santos Dumont may be the most infamous aviator to ever have lived. Why? Well, according to Brazilian history, Santos Dumont was the first individual to ever successfully pilot an airplane, even before the Americans, even before the Wright brothers. According to Rio 2016, Santos Dumont was born in Brazil in 1873. However, when Santos Dumont was a child, he and his family moved to Paris. according to the Olympics official website, it was there in Paris that Santos Dumont developed an interest in flying after taking his first flight there in a hot air balloon. Santos Dumont eventually began building balloons himself and earned the Deutsche de la Mertz prize shortly thereafter, where he flew a balloon from Parc St. Cloud to the Eiffel Tower. But it was the flight he made in 1906 which made him infamous and earned him the unofficial moniker, the Father of Aviation. The plane, recalling Brazilian aviation pioneer Alberto Santos Dumont, flies during the opening ceremony of the Rio 2016 Olympic Games at the Maracanã Stadium in Rio de Janeiro on August 5th. You see, according to CNET, Santos Dumont won a flying competition in France on October 23, 1906, when his winged aircraft flew approximately 200 feet in the air. And while this flight was 3 years after the Wright brothers, Brazilians argue Santos Dumont's flight was the real first flight because his plane was the first real airplane. The Wright brothers used a launching rail or a catapult system to get their craft off the ground. In fact, a 2006 physicist, Henrique Lins de Barros, argued that Santos Dumont's aircraft, the 14 Biz, was the first true airplane flight because it met all of the criteria set forth by the Federation Aeronautique International, the FAI, to make it a plane and to make it an official record-setting flight. The flight should be done before an official organization qualified to ratify it. The next is the flight should be done in calm weather and over a plain ground and properly documented. The next, the machine should be able to take off from a designated area by its own means with a man on board. The machine should carry on board the necessary source of energy. The machine should also fly in a straight line. The machine should make a change of direction, turn, and circle. And finally, the machine should return to the starting point. Unfortunately, to this day, the Wright versus Santos Dumont debate remains unresolved. However, regardless of who flew first, one thing is certain. Both the Wright brothers and Santos Dumont were groundbreakers, record setters, and history makers. Steve?
Yes, Dorothy. Here is more on Dumont from the article back on Wednesday, December 10, 2003. The headlines read, Petropolis, Brazil, Reuters. As Americans prepare to celebrate the centennial of the Wright brothers' first flight, a whole country is cringing on what it believes to be the historical injustice against one of their most beloved heroes. Ask anyone in Brazil who invented the airplane, and they will say Alberto Santos Dumont, a 5'4" bon voyant who was as well known for his aerial prowess as he was for his dandyish dress and high society in Belle Epique, Paris. As Paul Hoffman recounts in his Santos Dumont biography, Wings of Madness, the eccentric Brazilian was the first and only person to own a personal flying machine that would take him just about anywhere he wanted to go. He would keep his dirigible tied to a gas lamp post in front of his Paris apartment at the Champs-Élysées, and every night he would fly to Maxim's for dinner. During the day, he'd fly to go shopping, and he'd fly to visit friends. An idealist who believed flight was spiritually soothing, Santos Dumont, an idealist, financed his lavish lifestyle and aerial experiments in Paris with the inheritance his coffee-farming father had advanced him as a young man. Always impeccably dressed, he regularly took a gourmet lunch with him on his ballooning expedition. It was on November 12th, 1906, when Santos Dumont flew a kite-like contraption with boxy wings called the B-14 Biz, some 722 feet or 220 meters on the outskirts of Paris. It being the first public flight in the world, he was hailed as the inventor of the airplane all over Europe. Chuck.
Hey, Chuck.
Well, Chuck,
hear me. Can you hear me?
I can hear
here
you, Chuck. Go ahead. Tell us a little
it
bit
was only
more.
Later that the secret Orville and Wilbur Wright proved that they had beaten Santos Dumont at Kitty Hawk, North Carolina, 3 years earlier on December the 17th. But to bring up the Wright brothers with a Brazilian is bound to elicit an avalanche of arguments, some more reasonable than others, and as to why their compatriot flight didn't count. One of the biggest frauds in history, scoffed Wagner Daigo, a taxi driver at Rio de Janeiro, of the Wright brothers' inaugural flight. No one saw it. They used a catapult to launch the airplane. Didn't count. Apparently, the debate comes down to how you define the first flight of an airplane. Enrique Lanes de Barreiros, a Brazilian physicist and Santo Dumont expert, argues that the Wright brothers' flight did not fulfill the conditions that had been set up at the time to distinguish a true flight from a prolonged hop. And Santos Dumont's flight did meet the criteria, which is essentially meant he took off unassisted, publicly flew a predetermined length in front of experts and landed safely. Don?
Thank you. If we understand what criteria were at the end of the 19th century, the Wright brothers simply do not fill any of the prerequisites since Lynn DeBoers. Brazilians also claim that the Wrights launched their flyers in 1903 with a catapult or an incline, thereby disqualifying it for being a true airplane because it did not take off on its own. Even Santos Dumont experts like Dumont's DeBoers concede this is wrong, but he says that the strong, steady winds at Kitty Hawk were crucial for the flyer's takeoff, disqualifying the flight because there was no proof it could lift off on its own. Peter Jacob, chairman of the Aeronautics Division at the National Air and Space Museum in Washington and the Wright brothers' expert, says such claims are preposterous. By the time Santo Dumont got around to his maiden flight, the Wright brothers had already flown numerous times, including one in which they flew 24 miles in 40 minutes. Even in 1903, the airplane sustained itself in the air for nearly a minute. It is not sustaining itself under its own power. It's not going to stay up that long, Jacob says. It's up to you, Jimmy.
Never a country too eager to agree with the U.S. point of view. The Wright brothers, the Wrights, are considered to have flown before Santos Dumont, says Claude Carrière, the director of the French Center for the History of Aeronautics and Space. There's nothing wrong, strong, nationalist issue at play here, says Marcos Solaris, Santos Dumont's great grandnephew. Flight was very important. It was a very important step in human history, in the history of technology. Every country wants to claim priority. Now that we have a controversy out of our own little radio show, would anyone like to make a comment? Come and do it.
Hogwash. To the Brazilians.
Orville and Wilbur are rolling over in their graves.
Sounds like we have discontent here.
You got
I'll
that
go
right.
For Orville and Wright. That's my bet, Orville and Wright.
Yeah.
You know, that was a very good presentation that they made in Rio, especially that part of it. It was really fantastic. And they mentioned at the beginning of the opening that they were short on budget, but I think they did a hell of a good job.
Good job,
well,
Dorothy.
They had, yes. They had him dressed just like they talked about. It was he was real dapper looking. You know, he had this straw hat on, and he had a big mustache, and he had a suit jacket with his shirt, you know, buttoned all the way to the top, and he just had that elite look, and it really did look real Brazilian, and as we heard, his father was in coffee growing, but he really did look dapper, and they had the airplane just surfacing all around, flying up right out through and back in again. It was really pretty neat the way they had it done.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, bragging rights are very important to different people, and in this case, different countries. And I guess because of that story, the Brazilians made a very effective marketing tool that that their folks down there are inventors and very successful folks. And so they put that forth as being a major contribution, I guess, to aviation, the most major contribution, in my opinion, to aviation was made by Orville and Wilbur Wright. And again, as we were talking a little bit to our host before the show, I mentioned a book that was written by an author. I cannot remember author's names except George Jen's name, who wrote
that's only
book.
Because you want to be in the movie, Neil.
Yeah, there you go. I want a free ticket. But that book, and I suggest anyone that's interested in aviation, and like I mentioned before, we've all read stories about Columbus discovering America, and of course there's always claims by the Vikings and other folks that came here but way before Columbus did, and everybody wants to take claim of discovering this country. But the book The Wright Brothers is a wonderful book, and even having read as much as I've read, and I'm sure most all of our listeners and our host have read stories about the Wright brothers, this really brings it out front and center as to who these two men were and their families and what they contributed to this world of transportation, and truly recognized as the inventors of the aircraft. And even in this book, it tells about all of those that tried to take the patent that the Wright brothers had filed with the United States government for different parts of the airplane. I mean, even the aileron movement or the wing movement, and all sorts of different patents that they claimed. And this guy Dumont in Brazil, I hope there are no Brazilians listening to us tonight. But Dumont must have learned a lot in 3 years when he made his flight by hearing the news of the Wright brothers' airplanes that they were now producing and people were buying. So to make a claim like that, I don't know. I don't know whether I or if I were whoever made the decision to run that claim about this person being a Brazilian making the first flight. I think I would have stuck to a Budweiser commercial.
Yeah, but you got to realize that the Brazilians are arguing over the technique of the flight, not the flight itself. They're saying that the Wright brothers didn't stick to the the rule, so to speak, and that they did.
Yeah.
Well, the author's name was David McCullough Neal.
Okay. David, yeah, that's right.
The,
of the Wright brothers, yeah.
He was the two-time
and,
winner of the prize you mentioned.
Of the Pulitzer. And if you've not
right.
read anything, he's written several books, usually about the presidents and that type of book, historical books. And if you read the Wright brothers, if you have not read that book, which I think came out about 2 years ago, and it was on the bestsellers list, the New York Times, for at least half a year or more, maybe even a full year, from the time of it being number one several weeks and then dropping down the list of the top 10, which they usually publish. It was a wonderful book. My wife doesn't really even enjoy reading about aviation because she hears me talk about it all the time. But she saw it there and on my desk, and I had finished it, and she picked it up, and she says it was truly a wonderful book because it talks about the character of this man and his family, these men and their family. Great book, great book. Yeah, George, write us another one.
What's that, Neil?
Write us another book, George.
I'm actually working on one now, but I'm ghostwriting it for a doctor.
Yeah.
Okay. When do you think it might be out so we can be buying it?
Well, I'll tell you what. It's probably about 65% finished right now. It's a very sad book, but and I don't want to give it away, but it was a little bit difficult for me at first to get into it, but now that I'm into it, I realize it's something that this gentleman feels he has to do, so I'm helping him out with it.
Very good. Well,
yeah,
go ahead.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, George.
Well, I was telling you before the show, Neil, I got a call this week from the fellow who is writing the article about the of the three fellows who went up Mount Diamani to some of the crash debris from Eastern Flight 980. And one of the most – there were quite a few things he told me that surprised me a little bit. But one of the things I thought that you might find the most interesting was the fact that they spoke with Bernardo Garaci. And if you recall from my book, he was the first person who went to the site of the Eastern Flight 980 crash on him up on the mountain. And according to what Garaci told these people, which I found extremely interesting, number one was that the U.S. Embassy sent him either 2 or 3 days after the crash, not the NTSB, but the U.S. Embassy sent him. He had no training whatsoever as a aircraft accident investigator. But what I found to be even more interesting than that was upon his return, and by the way, he had a radio with him. He didn't take any photos, but he did have a radio with him just prior to his getting up there. And then, amazingly, it came back on when he started down. But no camera, nothing to bring with him. And but what he did say, what he did tell them was that he was interrogated by the Bolivian army upon his return. He was strip searched, and they wanted to know what he saw up there. And I had never heard that before. Obviously, I hadn't contacted him prior to writing my book. But, I mean, just think about that. Why would the embassy send someone, and not the NTSB, send someone who's not an aircraft accident investigator, send them without a camera, and then he was followed up the mountain by the Bolivian army and then grilled for, according to him, for a number of hours afterwards, and then strip searched. So, I mean, you can take that anywhere you want to go with it. But I just thought there were other interesting things that this gentleman told me, but to me that was one of the most interesting of all of them.
I still like the theory about the sun. of the, what I guess the president. He was involved with drugs.
Yeah, but that was the Paraguayan leader Stroessner. But if this was a normal crash of an airliner, just think about how this was handled versus the way it should have been to be properly handled. I mean, why would you strip search somebody who went to a crash site? I just found that to be amazing. I mean, all of these items, it just really, in my mind, deepened the mystery even more. But anyway, I just wanted to make you folks aware of that, and of course our listeners also.
You know, George, you probably have enough material to come back with a follow-up book on this.
Well, you know what? I would hope that the additional information, of course, I've been sending it to my publisher and to the producer, the movie producer. You know, I would hope that that would be included in the movie anyway, if not in another. I don't think I have enough material, actually, for another book, but I think that information should be added into the movie. But I spoke with Stacey Greer shortly after my interview, and she was also re-interviewed like I was, and amazingly, she had exactly the same questions for the author of the article that I did, and she was extremely skeptical, as I was, about the goings-on up there. But
George.
Yes.
George, bring us up to date as to a lot of people listening for the first time hearing the name Stacey Greer. Bring us up to date about who this Stacey Greer is and how is she involved in this.
Okay, Stacey, at the time of the Flight 980 crash on January 1st, 1985, I believe she was 3 years old, and she was the daughter of the second officer on that flight, Mark Byrd, who had taken the place of Ray Valdez, who typed two off the trip. And, of course, he was killed. Her dad was killed, and her mother and Stacey, as she got older, have been trying for the past 31 years to get a proper investigation launched and or get information from the National Transportation Safety Board, and they were both unsuccessful in both endeavors, and which doesn't surprise me, but it should be a slap in the face to everyone who's ever boarded a United States jetliner. I mean, you're aware, Neil, of the letter that former Eastern pilot Bob Furman received from the National Transportation Safety Board chairman a couple of months ago, where they said that they're not interested in the Flight 980 crash. As far as they're concerned, the book has been closed on that one. I mean, what an affront to not only to the victims' families, but to every Eastern Airlines employee. I mean, it just boggles my mind that this continues to this very day.
Yeah. Well,
I'm certain that Mr. Dumont would be very interested in that. That we're talking about here this evening.
Yeah. Well, I don't think the Wright brothers or Dumont was really ready for high altitude flying at the time they flew their airplanes.
No, but you know, if you think about it, it was just a little over 100 years ago. It's amazing how far we've come in the last 100 years, which is just a blink of an eye in the history of the world. You know, I just find it amazing. You know?
Yeah. It seems like a blink of the eye as to how old I am now.
Well, I think we all feel that way.
Yeah. I hope everyone is receiving the Keeping in Touch newspaper, and the only way you can receive it is by being a member of the EARA, Eastern Airlines Retiree Association. And folks, if you haven't joined that organization, then I highly recommend it, because there are so many benefits that the EARA organization provides for its members. Some of it is travel, and the only condition upon receiving travel benefits is to have had an Eastern employee number, I guess. But besides that, you need to join that organization because I just received a wonderful publication, Keeping in Touch 2016, issued issue number 311, which I hold in my hand right now, August-September issue 2016, and its editor is with us and one of our hosts, we're happy to say, Dorothy Gagnon. And Dorothy, you've done an outstanding job with this newspaper because it's, I hate to use the word tabloid size, but it is a it's a wonderful publication, and you've got some great stories in there, and you've got some great pictures, good color pictures, and about what's happening with Eastern Airlines. And on the front page, you have an article that I guess you wrote because your name is by Dorothy C. Gagnon, editor of the Keeping in Touch newspaper, and it's about National Aviation Day, which is coming up this month. A lot of people have never heard of that national holiday. Do they let schools out for National Aviation Day, Dorothy?
Yes. No, they really don't, actually. They probably should, because obviously that's cool for everybody to have such a great holiday. You know, aviation, as we all know, is just incredibly expansive with all of the different technology that comes out, that's out today. I mean, look at all the things they're doing. Look at the space and all of that. That, I mean, without starting with aviation, where would that have been? So it really is, I think, a national holiday. It's probably celebrated somewhere, and of course, all the museums around make sure that the air museums around make sure that they do. And in the newspaper, I put a list of the air museums that people might be interested in their own area. But it was fun doing the article because, of course, you know, belonging to an Eastern guy like Don, I hear a lot about aviation constantly. So I'm up on it just like you folks are. I feel like I belong just the way you folks do. But this article here was on National Aviation Day. It's observed in the United States on August 19th each year, and it celebrates the history and development of aviation. Originally, it was established by former President Franklin Delano Roosevelt to recognize the development of aviation. So I'm not really sure where he got the date from, but August 19th is also the birthday of Orville Wright, and it could be that's why he put it on that day. Orville Wright worked with his brother Wilbur to invent the world's first successful airplane. We don't quite know why this date, as I said, was designated by Roosevelt, but we do appreciate the work of all the aviators over the years who have worked to develop fast, safe air travel to broaden our horizons even more for all of us. Orville Wright made the first flight for 12 seconds and 120 feet around the site of the Wright Brothers National Memorial on December 17, 1903. They were not the first to build and fly experimental aircraft, but they are the first to invent aircraft controls that made fixed-wing flight possible. The Wright Brothers' status as inventors of the airplane have been an issue of debate, as we talked about tonight, particularly as there were competing claims regarding other early aviators. Aviation enthusiasts and students could also visit museums about aviation history and technology. Other people visit the Wright Brothers National Memorial in North Carolina at this time of the year. Aviation Day, August 19th, 2016, brings to all of us the time to think back of Eastern Airlines and how their travel broadened the horizons of many of their Eastern retirees. We search back in our memories often of the days back when, remembering the good times and the not so good times. So there's a nice list of the museums, you know, the Smithsonian and the museum in Oshkosh in Wisconsin. There's one in Dayton. I mean, there's several. There's two in Florida. So there's several that people could really go to, like I said, in their own area and enjoy seeing them like we do. Back to you, Neil.
Well, Dorothy, one of the greatest museums which you left out, and I was going to point that out, Brett, but perhaps we can have a show, and perhaps you can do an article in one of the future EARU magazines. As you mentioned, there are several museums around the country. And several in Florida, including one of the great museums of all the United States, which is the Naval Museum in Pensacola, Florida. If you've never visited that museum, you'll find that it is as large as, and I think at one time it was larger than, the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum. And that's in Pensacola, Florida. Wonderful museum. You can spend days in that museum. So it's a great place to visit in the panhandle of Florida, the Pensacola Naval Museum, if you're ever in that area. The Air Force got a museum over in Fort Walton. In that area, there's a museum over there at Fort Walton. What's the name of the Keesler, I guess it is, Air Force Base. I believe that's where it is. There's another museum there, Fort Walton, and that's the Air Force Museum. So there are lots of museums all over the U.S. About aviation. So we recognize this month, National Aviation Day. Dorothy?
Yes, they do. They have a lot of museums that are aviation. They have different events going on at the time that they invite people to go to. I mean, even the National Air Museum sends internet postings around saying what they're having today, you know, on the 19th. They have schedules for that. And so it's interesting to know all of that.
Well, I'm going to switch subjects from early aviation and museums, and I'm going to go to one that just happened here just a few days ago when I had the opportunity to go back down to Miami and visit with the new Eastern Airlines Group, Ed Wiegel's office, and the headquarters of the new Eastern Airlines, where I had the pleasure of being with Dorothy and Don Gagnon, myself, and let's see, who else was with us? Oh, Captain Emery Martinelli. He's right here with me here in the studio. But we visited the headquarters there, delivered three books to Ed Wiegel and the New Eastern.
Did Cecile go
and we
with
also,
you?
Huh?
Did Cecile go with you?
No, I called Cecile wanting her to go with me, but she had another appointment, so she couldn't go.
Thank you.
But we gave Ed Wiegel another picture, and as I heard from one of the employees there on the fourth floor, which is the headquarters there in Building 5B, he said that Ed Wiegel was very much a fan of Captain Eddie Rickenbacker. So the framed picture that I delivered to Ed Wiegel in addition to those three books was a picture by an artist known as Jim Whitlock. And you've probably seen, if you've seen Eastern art, you've seen many of the great pictures that Jim Whitlock out of Atlanta has drawn. And a lot of folks have a collection of his pictures. But he did one particular picture, art, that included a picture of Captain Eddie in the middle, his face, a bust, a portrait of Captain Eddie, surrounded by the Great Silver Fleet, all of those prop airplanes that made up the Great Silver Fleet and the Golden Fleet. back in the day of Captain Eddy. So we gave him a beautiful portrait, picture, frame picture, and hopefully it's hanging prominently on their wall, just as he did the picture that we gave him before that, which was a copy of the artwork of Captain Jerry Frost, who did the design of my little book, The Wings of Many. And I had Jerry to include in that picture that he did for my cover of that book. I had him place a 737-800, which is the airplane that they're flying now, right amongst all of the other aircraft Eastern flew in its history. And we presented that a couple of months ago, I guess, when I went down. And Ed was very kind about meeting with us. And this time we were hoping to have Ed there, but as it turned out, the FAA was there, and they arrested him for lunch, to take him out to lunch, I guess. But the FAA, his chief pilot, and I guess director of flight operations all went out. And so that was a little bit more important than meeting with Dorothy, Don, myself, and Emery. But we did have the pleasure of talking with several of their people, and we were really happy. As far as I'm concerned, what their thoughts of the former Eastern Airlines folks, I call them pioneers, and what they hope to do with the new Eastern Airlines. They were very courteous to us. Dorothy, would you like to add to those comments?
Well, the guys were really fabulous. I mean, they spoke to us quite a while, and their enthusiasm about the former Eastern employees wanting to be the same as we are, and they're striving so hard to get there. I mean, they're really working on all of these charter sales that they're trying to do, and they're so anxious to have the certificates for passengers. I mean, to hear them talk makes you feel really terrific, because it's all about the former Eastern people wanting to be like them, wanting to have that camaraderie, and the enthusiasm they have about it is just amazing, isn't it, Neil?
Absolutely.
Them?
I was so happy that they know a lot about the history of the former Eastern Airlines, or the Eastern Airlines that we work for. They know so much about the history and are very eager to learn more, because when they saw the books that we gave Ed Weagle, you know, they kind of looked at, these are really nice books. And we even gave, I see that we have area code 678 with us tonight on the microphone. I hope she's not in church. But anyway. But Mary Block had given me a book, and I left it down there to Ed to take a look at and to see what folks like Mary Block, who, as we recall last year, traveled out west from Chicago to Santa Monica using the old Route 66. And she's a member of the organization Sisters on the Fly. And she had sent me a beautiful copy of a color book that was written by, I guess, a couple of the gals there that go on those trips. I gave it to Ed to look at, and wrote him a note, because he wasn't there, wrote him a note that it's folks like Mary Block and her love of Eastern Airlines that she carries a message like a turtle with the American flag on its back. We've all seen those, of course. She carries her little 16-foot Shasta with the Eastern Airlines logo on the sides and in the back on all of her little journeys wherever she goes. Mary, are you listening tonight by any chance? No?
I am.
Wow. Okay. Did you hear the attagal that I just gave you?
Yes, you're embarrassing me.
Well, I've accomplished what I wanted to do, embarrass you. But, Mary, you have done so much to market Eastern Airlines, because it's the same logo that we worked under that they're using today on their airplanes. And so they must be mighty appreciative of you doing what you did on the Route 66 trip. But now you're taking another trip, and you're following the Lewis Clark expedition, Lewis and Clark. Oh, I guess we're all over 40 years old, and we probably know who Lewis and Clark were. But you're planning a trip next year, and I put a little note to Ed that what you intend to do. And so they've got the message, and they know folks like you, Mary, and others, that EARA, the Silver Liners, even the little small kitchen table radio show tries to do, and that's keep the name of Eastern alive, doing well. Mary, how about your comments? Tell us a little bit about, if you will, about your trip plan next year.
Well, we leave out of St. Charles, St. Louis area, and we are all headed on the Lewis and Clark expedition, and we're following all the stops, going to all the states. It's going to take us about five and a half weeks to get to Astoria, Oregon. And then it's going to take a number of weeks just to turn us around. But the main trip will be that of going. And we're just going to be, you know, having a great time doing the Voyage of Discovery. And stopping the places and visiting and just making friends and pretending like we were with Lewis and Clark on their adventure. And one of the things that I had talked with you about when we were talking, the gals want us to all have different trinkets, because Lewis and Clark and Becca Jouia, as they picked up along the way, they would do a lot of trading with trinkets. And so We decided that we'd do that too. So I was thinking that what I would give any and every person that I saw along the way would be an Eastern Airlines ballpoint pen. Hopefully they'll have their flag certification by the time we depart, and it can have the phone number on it of where people could call for individual reservations. So it's just really going to be an exciting adventure, and it's rather involved, but it's just going to be fun, and that's what it's all about. I was down at Bennett Springs with the little flyer just this last week and just got back in yesterday, and it just always is so fun. People come up and ask about Eastern and tell me stories and ask me questions, and it's just, it's fun. That's all. It just, I always tell them I was so grateful, so incredibly grateful to have had the privilege to work with such a great outfit. I made friends like just we all did that we'll never forget, and it just added to the quality of our lives. So I just always wanted a little Shasta, and I wanted her restored, and I always wanted to name her my little Eastern Flyer, and that's what's on her tail end. So that's it.
Mary, do you have a website? I know Sisters on the Fly has a website, but do you personally have a website for your little flyer?
Actually, I don't. I'm technologically challenged, but everybody tries to help me. I mean, one of the girls when I was down at Bennett Springs, one of the sisters, she got my Facebook page updated and she put the flyer on there. And but no, I don't have a web page. I mean, I'm kitchen talk radio like you are. Well, I'm sort of like that in the techie world. It's I just sort of fumble my way along.
Well, you do a great job, and your Shasta Little Flyer, as it's called. It's a 1965 model, I believe. So, if anyone wants to,
It's a
1960.
Yeah.
So, if you want to see what a 1960 Shasta looks like, just put it in your browser, 1960 Shasta, and you'll see a little six. I think it's a 16 footer, isn't it, Mary?
A 60 what here? I'm sorry. Say
16
that again?
Feet long.
Yes, it's a 16 foot.
Yeah.
16 footer.
Well,
yes.
Well, the reason I mentioned that is because my father had 1965, I think, Shasta, 16 foot as well. And it was a beautiful little overnighter, you know, for two people. That's all you can get in there. But you have yours dressed up just beautifully. And the interior, and you've added so many custom features inside, all aviation oriented, and then the outside, of course, everyone knows about Eastern Airlines.
No, I was just going to say, most of the guys that, you know, they like to look inside, the men, and they get real tickled over the stainless steel airplanes that I have as drawer and door pulls.
Yeah.
It's just being a kid.
Well, some of us guys like old antique cars and stuff like that, you know, guns and whatever. But your thing is doing a service to the new Eastern Airlines. And as I mentioned to Ed, it's people like you that is going to help push and push the new Eastern Airlines to success. After all, he did say at our last reunion, which I'm going to bring up in just a second, he did say that the new Eastern is standing on the shoulders of the old Eastern at our convention and reunion. Thanks, Mary. Appreciate it. Appreciate you being with us tonight.
Thanks, Neil.
And we got a bunch of, our board is lit up with listeners tonight. I'm surprised. Because I thought everyone would be watching the Olympics tonight, but we've got a board full of folks. Anyone that wants to make a comment, please do it now. Because at this point, I want to remind people we're getting very close to September 23rd and 24th. When we have a convention, or not a convention, a reunion, I keep wanting to call it a convention, but it's a reunion. And for those that were hired on a particular date, there may have been one or more people hired with you, and you had a class of people. And we want to encourage those people that have a class. We have a table reserved for you that if you'd like to be included in a reunion of your own class date hire with Eastern Airlines, we'd be happy to accommodate that at our reunion and celebration, because it's a reunion of the old and celebration of the new. That's why we call it the reunion and celebration. Lots of pioneers will be there. We have wonderful guests that will be there, speakers, and we're honoring two fantastic people that have done a lot for Eastern Airlines. One, a legendary person that we want to recognize, Captain Robert Wilbur, Jr., who was a captain involved in the hijacking, and his co-pilot, James E. Hartley. They named a building after him. It was a training center in Miami on 36th Street, the Hartley Building. You've all heard of that. And Jim Hartley lost his life in that flight, but all the passengers and the flight crew, the flight attendants, lived because of the heroic flight that Captain Bob Wilbur shot through both arms, turned the airplane around. Of course, had to wrestle and render unconscious the hijacker, turn the airplane around with wounds to both arms, land the DC-9 back in Boston, and saved all the souls on board. Even the hijacker lived through it, but James Hartley lost his life. Bob Wilbur is a very humble man and very quiet, really doesn't require and doesn't want the recognition that he is due from Eastern Airlines. And we tend to correct that at our reunion in celebration of what he did in 1978. By the way, hopefully we'll get a picture and he'll bring with him copy of the Daedalus Award that I think I pronounced that right. I never can pronounce that correctly, but Bob was presented the highest award in commercial aviation in 1979. He and his family will be there, and we have a presentation to him by Captain Ed Slane, another Eastern pilot that knows him very well, and we'll be honoring him. And also the contribution of Vito Borelli, who was the, I guess, the immediate president after the founder of Keeping in Touch, or the EARA organization, passed away. And I think Vito has pretty much been associated with that organization over the years, has given lots of benefits to a lot of us Eastern employees to travel about with reduced fares, and we intend to honor him during that. Dorothy, you got anything else to say since you and I are working together along with some other volunteers like Beverly LaPointe and others?
Right. We have Beverly and we have Connie Carrigan who have willingly offered to help us, which is going to be great. But we also have some entertainers that we have scheduled, some dancers that will be from 7:30 to 8:30 in the evening. And following that, we have Richard Frank, who's going to be a singer-entertainer, and that's going to be on Saturday evening. So we have the roast, and we have the Hall of Fame on Friday night, and then we have Saturday night with the dinner banquet. And we have the two roasting in the Hall of Fame that we're planning on doing. So it's going to be a great event for people to sign up with. The hotel, the Embassy Suites, is a great place to stay. We were down there the other day, and every time we go, it's just absolutely beautiful. I know that everybody's going to love it. And they gave a great rate of $129 per night. So we encourage everybody to sign up and, you know, join us in having this fun. You know, all of you out there have asked Captain Neil to put on this annual, and so we need all of you to sign up and join us to have some fun. It'll be a great weekend. Back to you, Neil.
Yeah, and we encourage you to get it reservations in as quickly as you can. You can go to our website, EALradioshow.com, find reservations there, even sign up with your Visa MasterCard for the $125 for both nights. And the hotel, you have to make reservations, but all the information is provided you at EALradioshow.com. So please do that, and we hope to have a large group of people there. And we encourage you to send it in as early as you can, because we need to know what type of meal that you will want to eat. We have three offerings, wonderful side orders, and desserts, but salmon, steak, and chicken done the Embassy Suites way. And I think you'll enjoy the food, the entertainment, the free drinks, and of course we have a sponsor, Homestead Funding, and they will be providing a hospitality suite drink as much as you want. Have a designated driver if you're not staying at the hotel. And you'll have a good time. Dorothy?
We also have the memorabilia on Friday and Saturday. Anyone that wants a table and have a setup for their memorabilia to either sell or display, please contact me. You can send me an email at dcgagnon@att.net, or you can call me at 561-369-8881, and I'll be glad to set a table aside and have it ordered for you. That will be for both days.
Very good. And I'm going to be sending out among all the members. We have over 900 members of the ELRadioshow.com website. So we'll be sending out again this week notices that we want you to sign get the reservations in as quickly as possible, because we're coming down on that date now. And we encourage you to fill that out and send it in. And
There's also an application in the back page of the Era Kit newspaper that anybody doesn't have email and would like to just cut that out and fill it in and send it in, would be happy to take care of it for you.
Very good. Very good. One final reminder before we sign off here tonight, by the way, at the end of our show, we've got a couple of selections of music that I'm sure you haven't heard since 1950s and 60s. Just three selections tonight. But we do a broadcast on Thursday at 3 o'clock, and we call it From the Eastern Files. And if you want to listen in, it's at 3 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, and we are offering Episode 6 now. And that will be August the 11th that we'll have that aired. And just listen in. There's no call in. Just listen to stories that we tell from the Eastern Files. And we hope you enjoy that. If you listen, we think you will. So that's pretty much our show, with the exception of landing Flight 279. Chuck, are you in the control tower?
Yes, I am. Eastern Flight 279, this is Miami Tower. You're clear to straight land in on runway 27 right. The winds are light and variable west at 10 miles an hour. And the present temperature is a balmy 82 degrees.
Miami Tower, this is Eastern 279, and we're ready to land on 27 right, and thank you for that.
Don't forget, folks, stick around after the hour that we need. This evening, we don't want for you to leave. We may have a new program for you.
Thank you, Jim Hart. Thank you, host. We enjoyed having you with us tonight. And for all of the Eastern family, we say good night.
Good night, Eastern. Love you, Eastern.
Good night, Eastern.
Au revoir. I'll be there. Good night.
sit alone most every night, watch those trains pull out of sight. Don't I wish they were carrying me back to Abilene, my Abilene. Abilene, Abilene, prettiest town I've ever seen. Women there don't treat you mean in Abilene, my Abilene. Crowded city, there ain't nothing free, nothing in this town for me. Wish to the Lord that I could be in Abilene, sweet Abilene. Abilene, Abilene, prettiest town I've ever seen. Women there,
West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountain, Shenandoah River. Life is older there, older than the trees, younger than the mountains, growing like the breeze. Country roads take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia, mountain mama, take me home, country road. All my memories gather round her, mindless lady, stranger to blue water. Dark and dusty, painted on the sky, misty taste of moonshine, teardrops in my eyes. Country roads take me home to the place I belong, West Virginia, mountain mama, take me home. I hear her voice in the morning hour, she calls me. The radio reminds me of my home far away. Driving down the road, I get a feeling that I should have been home yesterday, Lord. Yesterday, country road, take me home.
Jim.
Good night. We're listening.
Good night, Dorothy. Don.
Good night.
Wherever
guys.
You are.
My best to the president, Jim.
Good show tonight, guys.
Good night.
Good night.